This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recorded by Chip in Tampa, Florida, on March 19th, 2006. Fanny Hill, Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, by John Cleland. Part 4. I had it now, I felt it now, and beginning to drive, he soon gave nature such a powerful summons down to her favourite quarters that she could no longer refuse, repairing thither. All my animal spirits then rushed mechanically to that centre of attraction, and presently, inly warmed and stirred as I was beyond bearing, I lost all restraint, and yielding to the force of the emotion, gave down as mere woman those effusions of pleasure which in the strictness of still faithful love I could have wished to have held up. Yet, oh, what an immense difference did I feel between this impression of a pleasure merely animal, and struck out of the collision of the sexes by a passive bodily effect from that sweet fury, that rage of active delight which crowns the enjoyments of a mutual love-passion, where two hearts, tenderly and truly united, club to exalt the joy and give it to a spirit and soul that bids defiance to that which mere momentary desires generally terminate in when they die of the surfeit of satisfaction. Mr. H., whom no distinctions of that sort seemed to disturb, scarce gave himself or me breathing time from the last encounter, but, as if he had tasked himself to prove that the appearance of his vigour were not signs hung out in vain, in a few minutes he was in a condition for renewing the onset, to which, preluding with a storm of kisses, he drove the same course as before with unabated fervour, and thus, in repeated engagements, kept me constantly in exercise till dawn of morning, in all of which time he made me fully sensible of the virtues of his firm texture of limbs, his square shoulders, broad chest, compact hard muscles, in short, a system of manliness that might pass for no bad image of our ancient sturdy barons, when they wielded the battle-axe, whose race is now so thoroughly refined and frittered away to more delicate and modernly built frames of our pap-nerved softlings, who were as pale, as pretty, and almost as masculine as their sisters. Mr. H., content, however, with having the day break upon his triumphs, delivered me up to the refreshment of a rest we both wanted, and we soon dropped into a profound sleep. Though there was some time awake before me, yet he did not offer to disturb a repose he had given me so much occasion for, but on my first stirring, which was not till past 10 o'clock, I was obliged to endure one more trial of his manhood. About 11, in came Mrs. Jones, with 2 basins of the richest soup which her experience in these matters had moved her to prepare. I pass over the fulsome compliments, the cant of the decent procuress with which she saluted us both, but though my blood rose at the sight of her, I suppressed my emotions and gave all my concern to reflections on what would be the consequence of this new engagement. But Mr. H., who penetrated my uneasiness, did not long suffer me to languish under it. He acquainted me that, having taken a solid, sincere affection to me, he would begin giving me one leading mark of it by removing me out of the house, which must for many reasons be irksome and disagreeable to me, into convenient lodgings, where he would take all imaginable care of me, and desiring me not to have any explanations with my landlady, or be impatient till he returned, he dressed and went out, having left me a purse with 20 guineas in it, being all he had about him, as he expressed it, to keep up my pocket until further supplies. As soon as he was gone, I felt the usual consequence of the first launch into vice, for my love attachment to Charles never appeared to me in that light. I was instantly borne away down the stream, without making back to shore. My dreadful necessities, my gratitude, and above all, to say the plain truth, the dissipation and diversion I began to find in this new acquaintance from the black corroding thoughts my heart had been prey to ever since the absence of my dear Charles, concurred to stun all contrary reflections. If I now thought of my first, my only charmer, it was still with the tenderness and regret of the fondest love, embittered with the consciousness that I was no longer worthy of him. I could have begged my bread with him all over the world, but, wretch that I was, I had neither the virtue nor courage requisite not to outlive my separation from him. Yet, had not my heart been thus pre-engaged, Mr. H. might probably have been the sole master of it. But the place was full, and the force of conjectures alone had made him the possessor of my person, the charms of which had, by the by, been his sole object and passion, and were, of course, no foundation for a love either very delicate or very durable. He did not return until 6 in the evening to take me away to my new lodgings, and my movables being soon packed and conveyed into a hackney coach, it had cost but little regret to take my leave of a landlady whom I thought I had so much reason not to be overpleased with. And as for her part, she made no other difference to my staying or going but what that of the profit created. We soon got to the house appointed to me, which was that of a plain tradesman who, on the score of interest, was entirely at Mr. H.'s devotion, and who let him the first floor, very genteelly furnished, for 2 guineas a week, of which I was instated mistress, with a maid to attend me. He stayed with me that evening, and we had a supper from a neighbouring tavern, after which, and a gay glass or two, the maid put me to bed. Mr. H. soon followed, and notwithstanding the fatigues of the preceding night, I found no quarter nor remission from him. He piqued himself, as he told me, on doing the honours of my new apartment. The morning, pretty well advanced, we got to breakfast, and the ice now broke, my heart, no longer engrossed by love, began to take ease, and to please itself with such trifles as Mr. H.'s liberal liking led him to make his court to the usual vanity of our sex. Silks, laces, earrings, pearl necklace, gold watch, in short, all the trinkets and articles of dress were lavishly heaped upon me. The sense of which, if it did not create returns of love, forced a kind of grateful fondness, something like love, a distinction it would be spoiling the pleasure of 9/10 of the keepers of the town to make, and is, I suppose, a very good reason why so few of them ever do make it. I was now established the kept mistress in form, well lodged, with a very sufficient allowance, and lighted up with all the lustre of dress. Mr. H. continued kind and tender to me, yet with all this I was far from happy, for, besides my regret for my dear youth, which, though often suspended or diverted, still returned upon me in certain melancholic moments redoubled with violences, I wanted more society, more dissipation. As to Mr. H., he was so much my superior in every sense that I felt as if it too much to the advantage of the gratitude I owed him. Thus he gained my esteem, though he could not raise my taste. I was qualified for no sort of conversation with him except one sort, and that is a satisfaction which leaves tiresome intervals, if not filled up by love or other amusements. Mr. H., so experienced, so learned in the ways of women, numbers of whom had passed through his hands, doubtless soon perceived this uneasiness, and, without approving or liking me the better for it, had the complaisance to indulge me. He made suppers at my lodgings, where he brought several companions of his pleasures with their mistresses, and by this means I got into a circle of acquaintance that soon stripped me of all the remains of bashfulness and modesty which might yet be left of my country education, and were, just to a taste, perhaps the greatest of my charms. We visited one another in form, and mimicked, as near as we could, all the miseries, the follies, and the impertinences of the women of quality, in the round of which they trifled away their time, without its ever entering into their little heads that on earth there cannot subsist anything more silly, more flat, more insipid and worthless than, generally considered, their system of life is. They ought to treat the men as their tyrants. Indeed, were they to condemn them to it. But though amongst the mistresses I was now acquainted with a good many, besides some useful matrons who lived by their connections with them, I hardly knew one that did not perfectly detest her keeper, and, of course, made little or no scruple of any infidelity she could safely accomplish. I had still no notion of wronging mine, for, besides that no mark of jealousy on his side induced in me desire, or gave me the provocation to play him a trick of that sort, and thus the constant generosity, politeness, and tender attentions to please me, forced a regard to him, that, without affecting my heart, insured him my fidelity. No object had yet presented that could overcome the habitual liking I contracted for him, and I was on the eve of obtaining, from the movements of his own voluntary generosity, a modest provision for life, when an accident happened, which broke all the measures he had resolved upon in my favour. I had now lived near 7 months with Mr. H., when one day, returning from my lodgings in the neighbourhood, where I used to stay longer, I found the street door open, and the maid of the house standing at it, talking with some of her acquaintances, so that I came in without knocking, and as I passed by, she told me Mr. H. was above. I stepped upstairs into my own bedchamber with no other thought than of pulling off my hat, etc., and then to wait upon him in the dining-room, into which my bedchamber had a door, as is common enough. Whilst I was untying my hat-strings, I fancied I heard my maid Hannah's voice, and a sort of tussle, which, raising my curiosity, I stole softly to the door, where a knot in the wood had been slipped out, and afforded a very commanding peephole to the scene, then in agitation, the actors of which had been too earnestly employed to hear my opening my own door from the landing-place on the stairs and into my bedchamber. The first sight that struck me was Mr. H., pulling and hauling this coarse country strammel toward a couch that stood in the corner of the dining-room, to which the girl made only a sort of awkward boydening resistance, crying out so loud that I, who listened at the door, could scarce hear her, "Pray, sir, don't leave me alone. I am not for your turn. You cannot, sure, demean yourself with such a poor body as I. Lord, sir, my mistress may come home. I must not, indeed. I will cry out." All of which did not hinder her from insensibly suffering herself to be brought to the foot of the couch, upon which a push of no mighty violence served to give her a very easy fall, and my gentleman, having got up his hands to the stronghold of her virtue, she no doubt thought it was time to give up the argument, and that all further defence would be in vain, and he, throwing her petticoats over her face, was now as red as scarlet, discovered a pair of stout, plump, substantial thighs, and, tolerably white, he mounted them round his hips, and, coming out with his drawn weapon, struck it in the cloven spot, where he seemed to find less difficult entrance than perhaps he had flattered himself with, for, by the way, this blouse had left her place in the country for a bastard, and, indeed, all his motions shewed he was lodged pretty much at large. After he had done, his dearie gets up, drops her petticoats down, and smooths her apron and handkerchief. Mr. H. looked a little silly, and, taking out some money, gave it to her with an air indifferent enough, bidding her to be a good girl and say nothing. Had I loved this man, it was not in nature of me to have had patience to see the whole scene through. I should have broke in and played the jealous princess with a vengeance, but that was not the case. My pride alone was hurt, my heart not, and I could easier win upon myself to see how far he would go, till I had no uncertainty upon my conscience. The least delicate of all affairs of this sort being now over, I retired softly into my closet, where I began to consider what I should do. My first scheme, naturally, was to rush in and upbraid them. This, indeed, flattered my present emotions and vexations, as it could have given immediate vent to them, but on second thoughts, not being so clear as to the consequences to be apprehended from such a step, I began to doubt whether it might not be better to dissemble my discovery till a safer season, when Mr. H. should have perfected the settlement he had made overtures to me of, and which I was not to think such violent explanation, as I was indeed not equal to the management of, could possibly forward and might destroy. On the one hand, the provocation seemed too gross, too flagrant, not to give me some thoughts of revenge. The very start of which idea restored me to perfect composure, and delighted as I was with the confused plan of it in my head, I was easily mistress enough of myself to support the part of ignorance I had prescribed to myself, and all this circle of reflections was instantly over. I stole a tiptoe to the passage door, and, opening it with a noise, passed for having that moment come home. And after a short pause, as if to pull off my things, I opened the door into the dining-room, where I found the Dowdy blowing the fire, and my faithful shepherd walking about the room and whistling, as cool and unconcerned as if nothing had happened. I think, however, he had not much to brag of having out-dissembled me, for I kept up nobly the character of our sex for art, and went up to him with the same air of frankness as I had ever received him. He stayed but a little while, made some excuse for not being able to stay the evening with me, and went out. As for the wench, she was now spoiled, at least for my servant, and scarce 8 and 40 hours were gone round before her insolence on what passed between Mr. H. and her gave me so fair an occasion to turn her away at a minute's warning that to not have done it would have been the wonder, so that he could neither disapprove it nor find in it the least reason to suspect my original motive. What became of her afterwards I know not, but generous as Mr. H. was, he doubtlessly made her amends, though I dare answer that he kept up no farther commerce with her of that sort, as his stooping to such a coarse morsel was only a sudden sally of lust, on seeing a wholesome-looking, buxom country wench, and no more strange than hunger or even a whimsical appetite's making a fling meal of neck-beef for a change of diet. Had I considered this escapade of Mr. H. in no more than that light, and contented myself with turning away the wench, I thought and acted right. But flushed as I was with imaginary wrongs, I should have held Mr. H. to have been cheaply off, if I had not pushed my revenge farther, and repaid him, as exactly as I could for the soul of me, in the same coin. Nor was this worthy act of justice long delayed us. I had it too much at heart. Mr. H. had, about a fortnight before, taken into his service a tenant's son, just come out of the country, a very handsome young lad, scarce turned of 19, fresh as a rose, well-shaped, and clever-limbed, in short, a very good excuse for any woman's liking, even though revenge had been out of the question. Any woman, I say, who was disprejudiced, and had wit and spirit enough to prefer a point of pleasure to a point of pride. Mr. H. had clapped a livery upon him, and his chief employ was, after being shewn my lodgings, to bring and carry letters or messages between his master and me, and as the situation of all kept ladies is not the fittest to inspire respect, even to the meanest of mankind, and perhaps less of it from the most ignorant, I could not help observing that this lad, who was, I supposed, acquainted with my relation to his master by his fellow-servants, used to eye me in that bashful, confused way, more expressive, more moving, and readier catched at by our sex than any other, and, innocent as he was, he did not himself know that the pleasure he took in looking at me was love or desire, but his eyes, naturally wanton and now inflamed with passion, spoke a great deal more than he durst have imagined they did. Hitherto, indeed, I had only taken notice of the comeliness of the youth, but without the least design. My pride alone would have guarded me from a thought that way, had not Mr. H.'s condescension with my maid, where there was not half the temptation in point of person, set me a dangerous example. But now I began to look on this stripling as in every way a delicious instrument of my designed retaliation upon Mr. H., of an obligation for which I should have made a conscience to die in his debt. In order to pave the way for the accomplishment of my scheme, for two or three times the young fellow came at me with messages, I managed so as, without association, to have him admitted to my bedside, or brought to me at my toilette, where I was dressing, and by carelessly shooing or letting him see, as if without intention or design, sometimes my bosom rather more bare than it should be, sometimes my hair, of which I had a very fine head in the natural flow of it while combing, sometimes a neat leg that had unfortunately slipped its garter, which I made no scruple of tying before him, easily gave him the impressions favourable to my purpose, which I could perceive to sparkle in his eyes and glow in his cheeks. Then certain slight squeezes by the hand as I took letters from him did his business completely. When I saw him thus moved and fired for my purpose, I inflamed him yet more by asking him several leading questions, such as, had he a mistress? Was she prettier than me? Could he love such a one as I was? And the like. To all which the blushing simpleton answered to my wish in a strain of perfect nature, perfect undebauched innocence, but with all the awkwardness and simplicity of country breeding. When I thought I had sufficiently ripened him for the laudable point I had in view, one day I expected him at a particular hour. I took care to have the coast clear for the reception I designed him, and as I laid it, he came to the dining-room door, tapped at it, and on my bidding him come in, he did so, and shut the door after him. I desired him then to bolt it on the inside, pretending it would not otherwise keep shut. I was then lying at length on that very couch, the scene of Mr. H.'s polite joys, in an undress which was with all the art of negligence flowing loose and in a most tempting disorder. No stay, no hoop, no encumbrance whatever. On the other hand, he stood at a little distance that gave me a full view of a fine-featured, shapely, healthy country lad breathing the sweets of fresh, blooming youth. His hair, which was off a perfect shining black, played to his face in natural side curls and was set out with a smart tuck-up behind new buckskin breeches that, clipping close, shewed the shape of a plump, well-made thigh, white stockings, garter-laced livery, shoulder-knot, altogether composed a figure in which the beauties of pure flesh and blood appeared under no disgrace from the lowness of a dress, to which a certain spruce neatness seems particularly fitted. I bid him come toward me and give me the letter, at the same time throwing down carelessly a book I had in my hands. He coloured, and came within reach of delivering me the letter, which he held out awkwardly enough for me to take, with his eyes riveted on my bosom, which was, through the designed disorder of my handkerchief, sufficiently bare, and rather shaded than hid. I, smiling in his face, took the letter, and immediately catching gently hold of his shirt-sleeve, drew him towards me, blushing and almost trembling, for surely his extreme bashfulness and utter inexperience called for, at least, all the advances to encourage him. His body was now conveniently inclined towards me, and just softly chucking his smooth, beardless chin, I asked him if he was afraid of a lady. And with that look, and carrying his hand to my breasts, I pressed it tenderly toward them. They were now finely furnished, and raised in flesh, so that, panting with desire, they rose and fell in quick heaves under his touch. At this, the boy's eyes began to lighten with all the fires of inflamed desire, and his cheeks flushed with a deep scarlet, tongue-tied with joy, rapture, and bashfulness. He could not speak, but then his looks, his emotions, sufficiently satisfied me that my train had taken, and that I had no disappointment to fear. My lips, which I threw in his way now so that he could not escape kissing them, fixed, fired, and emboldened him, and now, glancing my eyes toward that part of his dress which covered the essential object of enjoyment, I plainly discovered the swell and commotion there, and as I was now too far advanced to stop in so fair a way, and was indeed no longer able to constrain myself, or wait the slower progress of his maiden bashfulness, for such it seemed and really was, I stole my hand upon his thighs, down one of which I could see and feel a stiff, hard body confined by his breeches, that my fingers could discover no end to. Curious, then, and eager to unfold so alarming a mystery, playing, as it were, with his buttons, which were bursting, ripe from the active force within, those of his waistband and foreflap flew open at the touch, and out it started, and now, disengaged from the shirt, I saw with wonder and surprise. What? Not the plaything of a boy, not the weapon of a man, but a maypole of so enormous a standard that, had proportions been observed, it must have belonged to a young giant. Its prodigious size made me shrink again, yet I could not, without pleasure, behold, and even ventured to feel such a length, such a breadth of animated ivory, perfectly well turned and fashioned, the proud stiffness of which distended its skin, whose smooth polish and velvet softness might vie with the most delicate of our sex, and whose exquisite whiteness was not a little set off by a sprout of black, curling hair round the root, though the jetty springs of which the fair skin shewed, as in a fine evening you may have remarked the clear light either through the branchwork of distant trees overtopping the summit of a hill, then the broad bluish casted incarnate of the head, and the blue serpentines of its veins, all together composed the most striking assemblage of figure and colours in nature. In short, it stood an object of terror and delight. But what was yet more surprising, the owner of this natural curiosity, through the want of occasions and the strictness of his home breeding, and the little time that he had been in town not having afforded him one, was hitherto an absolute stranger, in practice at least, to the use of all that manhood which he was so nobly stocked with, and it now fell to my lot to stand his first trial of it, if I could resolve to run the risks of its disproportion to that tender part of me which such an oversized machine was very fit to lay in ruins. But it was now of the latest to deliberate, for by this time the young fellow, overheated with the present objects, and too high-mettled to be longer curbed in by that modesty and awe which had hitherto restrained him, ventured, under the stronger impulse and instructive promptership of nature alone, to slip his hands, trembling with eager, impetuous desires, under my petticoats, and seeing, I suppose, nothing extremely severe in the looks to stop or dash him, he feels out and seizes gently the centre spot of his ardours. Oh, then the fiery touch of his fingers determines me, and my fears melting away before the glowing intolerable heat, my thighs disclose of themselves and yield all liberty to his hand, and now a favourable movement giving my petticoats a toss. The avenue lay too fair, too open to be missed. He is now upon me. I had placed myself with a jet under him, as commodious and open as possible to his attempts, which were untoward enough, for his machine, meeting with no inlet, bore and battered stiffly against me in random pushes, now above, now below, now beside this point, till, burning with impatience from its irritating touches, I guided gently with my hand this furious engine to which my young novice was now to be taught his first lesson of pleasure. Thus he nicked at length the warm and insufficient orifice, but he was made to find no breach impracticable, and mine, though so often entered, was still far from wide enough to take him easily in. By my direction, however, the head of his unwieldy machine was so critically pointed that, feeling him foreright against the tender opening, a favourable motion from me met his timely thrust, by which the lips of it, strenuously dilated, gave way to his thus assisted impetuosity, and that we might both feel that he had gained a lodgment, pursuing then this point, he soon, by violent and, to me, most painful piercing thrusts, wedges himself at length so far in as to be now tolerably secure of his entrance. Here he stuck, and I know I felt such a mixture of pleasure and pain as there is no giving a definition of. I dreaded alike his splitting me further up or his withdrawing. I could not bear either to keep or part with him. The sense of pain, however, prevailing from his prodigious size and stiffness, acting upon me in the continued rapid thrusts with which he furiously pursued his penetration, made me cry out gently, "Oh, my dear, you hurt me!" This was enough to check the tender and respectful boy, even in his mid-career, and he immediately drew out the sweet cause of my complaint, whilst his eyes eloquently expressed at once his grief for hurting me, and his reluctance at dislodging from quarters of which the warmth and closeness had given him a gust of pleasure that he was now desire mad to satisfy, and yet too much a novice not to be afraid of withholding his relief on account of the pain he had put me to. But I was, myself, far from being pleased with his having too much regarded my tender exclaims, for now, more and more fired with the object before me, as it still stood with the fiercest erection, unbonneted and displaying its broad vermilion head, I first gave the youth a re-encouraging kiss, which he repaid me with a fervour that seemed at once to thank me and to bribe my farther compliance, and soon replaced myself in a posture to receive, at all risks, the renewed invasion, which he did not delay for an instant, for being presently remounted, I felt once more the smooth, hard gristle forcing an entrance, which he achieved rather easier than before, pained, however, as I was with his efforts of gaining a complete admission, which he was so regardful as to manage by gentle degrees, I took care not to complain. In the meantime, the soft, straight passage gradually loosens, yields, and, stretched to its utmost bearing by the stiff, thick, indriven engine, sensible at once to the ravishing pleasure of the feel of the pain of the distension, let him in about halfway, when all the most nervous activity he now exerted to further his penetration gained him not an inch for his purpose, for whilst he hesitated there, the crisis of pleasure overtook him, and the close compressure of the warm surrounding fold drew from him the ecstatic gush, even before mine was ready to meet it. Kept up by the pain I had endured in the course of the engagement from the insufferable size of his weapon, though it was not yet in above half its depth. I expected then, but without wishing it, that he would draw, but was pleasantly disappointed, for he was not to be left off so. The well-breathed youth, hot-mettled and flushed with genial juices, was now fairly in for making me know my driver. As soon, then, as he had made a short pause, waking, as it were, out of the trance of pleasure in which every sense seemed lost for a while, whilst with his eyes shut and short, quick breathing, he had yielded down his maiden tribute, he still kept his post, yet unsated with enjoyment and solacing in these so new delights, till his stiffness, which had scarcely perceptibly remitted, being thoroughly recovered to him, who had not once unsheathed, he proceeded afresh to cleave open to himself an entire entry to me, which was not a little made easy for him by the balsamic injection with which he had just plentifully moistened the whole internals of my passage. Redoubling, then, the active energy of his thrusts, favoured by the fervid appetite of my motions, the soft oiled wards can no longer stand so effectual a picklock, but yield and open to him an entrance. And now, with conspiring nature and my industry strong to aid him, he pierces, penetrates, and at length, winning his way inch by inch, gets entirely in. And finally, mighty thrust sheathes it up to the guard, on the information of which, from the close jointure of our bodies, insomuch that the hair on both sides perfectly interweaved and encircled together, the eyes of the transported youth sparkled with more joyous fires, and all his looks and motions acknowledge excess of pleasure, which I now began to share, for I felt him in my very vitals. I was quite sick with delight, stirred beyond bearing with its furious agitations within me, and gorged and crammed even to surfeit. Thus I lay gasping, panting under him, till his token breathings, faltering accents, eyes twinkling with humid fires, lunges more furious, and an increased stiffness gave me to hail the approaches of the second period. It came, and the sweet youth, overpowered with ecstasy, died away in my arms, melting in a flood that shot in genial warmth into the innermost recesses of my body, every conduit of which dedicated to that pleasure was on flow to mix with it. Thus we continued for some instants, lost, breathless, senseless of everything and in every part but those favorite ones of nature in which all that we enjoyed of life and sensation was now totally concentrated. When our mutual trance was a little over, and the young fellow had withdrawn that delicious stretcher with which he had most plentifully drowned all thoughts of revenge in sense of actual pleasure, the widened, wounded passage refunded a stream of pearly liquids which flowed down my thighs mixed with streaks of blood, the marks of the ravage of that monstrous machine of his which had now triumphed over a kind of second maidenhead. I stole, however, my handkerchief to those parts and wiped them dry as I could, whilst he was readjusting and buttoning up. I made him now sit down beside me, and as he had gathered courage from such extreme intimacy, he gave me an after-course of pleasure, in a natural burst of tender gratitude and joy at the new scenes of bliss I had opened to him, scenes positively new, as he had never before had the least acquaintance with that mysterious mark, the cloven stamp of female distinction, though nobody better qualified than he to penetrate into its deepest recesses, or to do it nobler justice. But when by certain motions, certain unquietness of his hands that wandered not without design, I found he languished for satisfying a curiosity, natural enough, to view and handle those parts which attract and concentrate the warmest force of imagination, charmed as I was to have any occasion of obliging and humouring his young desires, I suffered him to proceed as he pleased, without check or control, in the satisfaction of them. Easily, then, reading in my eyes the full permission of myself to all his wishes, he scarce pleased himself more than me, than when, having insinuated his hand under my petticoat and shift, he presently removed those bars to the sight by slightly lifting them upwards, under favour of a thousand kisses, which he thought, perhaps, necessary to divert my attention from what he was about. All my drapery being now rolled up to my waist, I threw myself into such a posture upon the couch as gave up to him, in full view, the whole region of delight, and all the luxurious landscape round it. The transported youth devoured everything with his eyes, and tried with his fingers to lay more open to the sight the secrets of that dark and delicious deep. He opens the folding lips, the softness of which yielding entry to any thing of a hard body close around it, and oppose the sight, and feeling further meets with and wonders at a soft fleshy excrescence which, limber and relaxed after the late enjoyment, now grew under the touch and examination of his fiery fingers, more and more stiff and considerable, till the titillating ardours of that so sensible part made me sigh, as if he had hurt me, on which he withdrew his curious probing fingers, asking me pardon, as it were, in a kiss that rather increased the flame there. Novelty ever makes the strongest impressions, and in pleasures especially. No wonder, then, that he was swallowed up in raptures of admiration of things so interesting by their nature, and now seen and handled for the first time. On my part, I was richly overpaid for the pleasure I gave him, in that of examining the power of those objects thus abandoned to him, naked and free to his loosest wish, over the artless natural stripling, his eyes streaming fire, his cheeks glowing with a florid red, his fervent, frequent sighs, whilst his hands convulsively squeezed, opened, pressed together again, the lips and sides of that deep flesh wound, or gently twitched the overflowing moss, and all proclaimed the excess, the riot of joys in having his wantonness thus humoured. But he did not long abuse my patience, for the objects before him had now put him and all his, and by coming out with that formidable machine of his, he lets the fury loose, and, pointing it directly to the pouting-lipped mouth, that bid him sweet defiance in dumb shoe, squeezes in the head, and driving with refreshed rage, breaks in, and plugs up the whole passage of that soft pleasure conduit, where he makes all shake again, and put once more all within me into such an uproar as nothing could still but a fresh inundation from the very engine of those flames, as well as from all the springs of which nature floats that reservoir of joy when risen to its flood mark. I was now so bruised, so battered, so spent with this overmatch that I could hardly stir or raise myself, but lay palpitating till the ferment of my sense subsiding by degrees, and the hour striking at which I was obliged to dispatch my young man, I tenderly advised him of the necessity there was for parting, which I felt as much displeasure at as he could do, who seemed eagerly disposed to keep the field and to enter on a fresh action, but the danger was too great, and after some hearty kisses of leave and recommendations of secrecy and discretion, I forced myself to send him away, not without assurances of seeing him again, to the same purpose, as soon as possible, and thrust a guinea into his hands, not more, lest, being too flush of money, a suspicion or discovery might arise from thence, having everything to fear from the dangerous indiscretion of that age in which young fellows would be too irresistible, too charming, if we had not that terrible fault to guard against. Giddy and intoxicated as I was with such satiating draughts of pleasure, I lay on the couch, supinely stretched out, in a delicious languor diffused over all my limbs, hugging myself for being thus revenged to my heart's content, and that in a manner so precisely alike, and on the identical spot in which I had received the supposed injury. No reflections on the consequences ever once perplexed me, nor did I make myself one single reproach for having by this step completely entered myself of a profession more decried than disused. I should have held it ingratitude to the pleasure I had received to have repented of it, and since I was now over the bar, I thought by plunging over head and ears into the stream I was carried away by, to drown all sense of shame or reflection. Whilst I was thus making these laudable dispositions, and whispering to myself in a kind of tacit vow of incontinency, enters Mr. H. The consciousness of what I had been doing deepened yet the glowing of my cheeks, flushed with the warmth of the late action which, joined to the piquant air of my dishabille, drew from Mr. H. a compliment on my looks which he was proceeding to back the sincerity of with proofs, and that with so brisk an action as made me tremble for fear of discovery from the condition of those parts were left in to their late severe handling, the orifice dilated and inflamed, the lips swollen with their uncommon distension, the ringlets pressed down, crushed and uncurled with the overflowing moisture that had wet everything round it, in short, the different feel and state of things could hardly have passed upon one of Mr. H.'s nicety and experience unaccounted for by the very real cause. But here the woman saved me. I pretended a violent disorder of my head and a feverish heat that indisposed me too much to receive his embraces. He gave in to this and good-naturedly desisted. Soon after, an old lady coming in made a third, very apropos for the confusion I was in, and Mr. H., after bidding me take care of myself and recommending me to my repose, left me much at ease and relieved by his absence. In the close of the evening, I took care to have prepared for me a warm bath of aromatic and sweet herbs, in which, having fully laved and solaced myself, came out voluptuously refreshed in body and in spirit. The next morning, waking pretty early, after a night's perfect rest and composure, I was not without some dread and uneasiness that I thought of what invocation that tender, soft system of mine might have sustained from the shock of a machine so sized for its destruction. Struck with this apprehension, I scarce dared to carry my hand thither, to inform myself of the state and posture of things. But I was soon agreeably cured of my fears. The silky hair that covered round the borders, now smoothed and re-pruned, had resumed its wonted curl and trimness. The fleshy, pouting lips that had stood the brunt of the engagement were no longer swollen or moisture-drenched, and neither they nor the passage into which they had opened, that suffered so great a dilation, betrayed any the least alteration, outward or inwardly, to the most curious research, notwithstanding also the laxity that naturally follows a warm bath. The continuation of that grateful stricture which is in us, to the men, the very jet of their pleasure, I owed, it seemed, to a happy habit of body, juicy, plump, and furnished toward the texture of those parts, with a fullness of soft, springy flesh, yielding sufficiently, as it does, to almost any distension, soon recovers itself to retighten that strict compression of its mantlings and folds which form the sides of the passage, wherewith it so tenderly embraces and closely clips any foreign body introduced into it, such as my exploring finger then was. Finding, then, everything in due tone and order, I remembered my fears only to make a jest of them to myself, and now, palpably mistress of nay size of man, and triumphing in my double achievement of pleasure and revenge, I abandoned myself entirely to the ideas of all the delight I had swam in. I lay stretching out, glowingly alive all over, and tossing with burning impatience for the renewal of joys that had sinned but in a sweet excess. Now did I loose my longing, for about 10 in the morning, according to expectation, Will, my new humble sweetheart, came with a message from his master, Mr. H., to know how I did. I had taken care to send my maid on an errand into the city, that I was sure would take up time enough, and from the people of the house I had nothing to fear, as they were plain good sorts of folks, and wise enough to mind no more of other people's business than they could well help. All dispositions then made, not forgetting that of lying in bed to receive him, when he entered the door of my bedchamber, a latch that I governed by a wire descended and secured it. I could not but observe that my young minion was as much spruced out as could be expected from one in his condition, a desire of pleasing that could not be indifferent to me, since it proved that I pleased him, which, I assure you, was now a point I was not above having in view. His hair, trimly dressed, clean linen, and above all a hale, ruddy, wholesome country look, made him out as pretty a piece of woman's meat as you could see, and I should have thought nay one much out of taste that could not have made a hearty meal of such a morsel as nature seemed to have designed for the highest diet of pleasure. So ends part 4.